In a tense time for America, professional athletes use their platform to call for justice. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, as the Jaguars release Leonard Fournette, the team is also raising its voice in the national racial justice movement. Give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join the show. Then later, how to maintain our mental and emotional well-being during this crazy time in America. We can all do a better job at that, right? But first this hour, here's the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. Statewide, the Department of Health reports 621,586 cases of coronavirus. That's a one-day increase of 2,583. 11,119 deaths have been recorded in Florida from this virus, although the death toll took a slight decrease yesterday. In our area, 448 deaths due to COVID have now been recorded. In the midst of this pandemic, we're looking at everything that happened over the last few days around the country and here in Jacksonville, unrest in Portland and Kenosha, Wisconsin, as professional sports teams are adding their voice and platform to the national movement for racial justice. In a few minutes, we're going to speak with reporter John Reed of the Florida Times Union about the Jaguars' place in this national movement. But first, WJCT's Sky LeBron joins us in studio with his thoughts. Hey, Sky, good morning.
Hey, Melissa.
And let us know your thoughts, sports fans, or anyone who's following this, as we talk about how the Jaguars are adding their voice to this conversation. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. So violence and clashes in a few American cities have riveted the nation's attention over the last several days, Sky, as professional sports teams, football players, basketball players, and others are adding their voice to this whole division in America right now that we are all experiencing. You went over to TIAA Bank Field over the weekend to check out how they've proofed the stadium to make it safer for fans and players and staff in this time of a pandemic. And so that is the backdrop as the NFL season begins, how to keep the game safe. At the same time, we learned just this morning that Jaguars running back Leonard Fournette has been released by the team. Fournette really was the face of the Jaguars speaking out about the state of race relations, both in this city and nationwide. He led a peaceful protest, called for the removal of the Confederate statue in Heming Park that eventually did come down. What's the significance of Fournette being let go from the Jaguars?
Yeah, I want to talk about the things that Leonard Fournette did for the community recently first, and that is... One of the strengths that we saw from the summer was the mayor coming together, Sheriff Mike Williams coming together with these Jags players and hosting a unity march that they walked from City Hall down to the Duval County Courthouse. And we heard Leonard Fournette very vocal in front of the steps of City Hall calling for the removal of the Heming Park Monument, as well as other monuments that were coming down that the mayor announced that very same day. When it comes to the football side of things, well, one, just talking about the new getup in the stadium, things are a lot different. So this Saturday, there is like a walkthrough for a lot of the reporters to go through just to showcase what's going on to make sure the games are safer. Now, they're already capping the capacity at 25%. So that's the biggest difference. You're not going to see nearly as many people as you would normally see on any Sunday. But there are a number of signs throughout. They're always promoting social distancing. Wearing your masks is required at all times, even when you are in your seat and with the pod of people that you're with. That's the other thing. You buy pods now. You don't just buy, let's say you want to get four tickets. You're now in a four-person pod. And if you want to sell your tickets, you have to sell all four pods. You can't just sell it to random strangers and things like that. The other big part of it that I saw was whenever you go to the concession stands, it can all be touchless. You can, one, order from your phone while you're still sitting in your seat, and then you go to a kind of sideline next to the concession stand, say, hey, I ordered online. You show them your phone and they give you your food. Condiment stations have been eliminated, so you have to ask for the condiments right up there. There's just a lot of differences that try to eliminate all forms of contact that you'll have with a bunch of people. On top of that, I would say the biggest thing for me and just seeing it is how are they going to require the masks while people are sitting down? And they said that they're going to have a lot of compliance officers that are checking, walking around the stadium, making sure, hey, you have to have your mask on, sir. You have to have your mask on, ma'am. Just to make sure that this is actually being followed through and not just something that, you know, keep your mask on, but a lot of people are taking it off by the second quarter.
So the Jaguars are actually holding a press conference right now with head coach Doug Marrone talking about some of the player changes and COVID changes for the new season. They are planning to have, they say, about 17,000 fans next week for their season opener. And amidst all of this, fans are now being asked to go into a very different experience if they choose to go see a game, whether it's an NFL game or any professional sports game. Players are, in addition to trying to keep the fans safe and themselves safe, players are adding their voice to the Black Lives Matter movement in a bold way. We've seen, particularly with the NBA, the cancellation of games, unless the team owners paid more than lip service to this movement. NBA arenas now, as part of a settlement that's been reached, will be polling places in the November election. So that's what the professional basketball players are doing, particularly led by LeBron James. It makes you wonder if the NFL will follow suit, maybe open up these COVID-safe arenas. As you just said, they've proofed them for COVID. Will they, too, get in on this and let people come and vote at an NFL stadium?
I think that'd be an interesting prospect to consider. One thing that the NFL just outlined, I believe it was within the past weekend, is what they're going to allow players to wear. So we saw a lot of the NBA players, they took out the last name, their nameplate from the back of their jerseys, and instead they have different messages, whether it's Black Lives Matter, equality, a bunch of different phrases that people are using now in the back of their jerseys. For the NFL, they announced that in the back of their helmets, there's a white strip that kind of says the team's name on it. So if it's the Packers, it says Packers. Jaguars, it says Jaguars. Now, players are going to be able to put what they want on the back of their helmets, whatever social message they would like. And they said that it would be easy for cameras to pick up so that they can address their social concerns that they have. It'll be interesting to see because the NBA has always, or at least in recent years, stood with the players very closely. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the NFL, there has been some divide in recent years. You look at the MLB, you see the same thing. And the MLB has showcased that they're trying to stand with the players, allowing them to wear cleats and things like that to have social media messages on it. So it'll be interesting as the NFL season ramps up, how far are they going to let the players go? Because the NBA straight up canceled games. Would that be allowed if something were to happen and the NFL players don't want to play?
Apparently, head coach Doug Marrone just said that they waived Leonard Fournette strictly because of his on-the-field and skill set of guys at the running back position. It had nothing to do with anything off the field. In other words, his activism. Because certainly some people might question that.
Yeah, and I mean, there were some off-field concerns when he was when Tom Coughlin was the vice president of football operations. There were some disagreements there, but Leonard Fournette showed that he was a pretty good role model for this team. It's kind of an odd move, I think. They do have a couple younger running backs. One is Rykel Armstead, who is in his second year. He didn't get a lot of run last year. And then you look at Chris Thompson, who's been on the Washington football team for a very long time now, moving over to the Jaguars. But, the main thing that you could say is maybe this was for cap space, but the Jaguars have over $70 million in cap space. So it's just interesting to wonder why they wouldn't want a veteran presence with this very young and growing team.
Sky LeBron, great to get your insights.
Thank you so much.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment. Let us know your thoughts and perceptions about how professional athletes are adding their voice to the national movement for racial justice. It's 549-2937. Of course, in June, the Jaguars became the first professional sports franchise to organize a protest following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And in recent days, they've been meeting with their coaches to discuss how they can contribute to change in this country. This after the police shooting of Jacob Blake, another black man shot in the back in Kenosha, Wisconsin. As many of you out there know, there have been sometimes violent clashes in Kenosha in the wake of Blake's shooting. Problems in Portland, Oregon, too. Reporter John Reed of the Florida Times Union was just listening in to the news conference this morning with Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone, and he is on the line with more about all of this. Hi, John. Thanks for getting off that conference a little early and getting on with us. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to be here.
So what are the first takeaways? I know. What a world we live in. What are your first takeaways from what you heard from Doug Marrone just now?
I don't think that explanation that he gave was thorough enough. My own personal thing, I think that there's more going on that's not being discussed. I mean, it's not so much of him getting released. The shocking part for me is that I don't think you could convince me that there wouldn't have been a team to lease off a future pick or a seventh-round pick or a late round or something. And it just seems like this was a rush decision, not planned out. I mean, I don't know if something happened yesterday or this morning. I noticed that he didn't get a lot of reps or carries in the scrimmage Saturday. And pretty much also, he looked pretty good in the practices and the training camp, and his explanation was that they're moving in a direction of being a young team, and they felt that at this point, which I felt that if you're going to make that decision 2 weeks to go before the season opening, then you probably should have made that decision in April, that he didn't feel that he fit with what their direction that they're going in anyway. And, but their running back room, Rockell Armstead is a pretty good young player. Chris Thompson, who they signed in free agency, is a, good back, a third down back that can get, catch passes out of the backfield. But, you're talking about a guy who ran for 1,600 yards, a power runner, can get inside. He's had his issues on and off the field, but make no mistake, this is a 6-10 team, and a 6-10 team don't just release talent and doesn't get compensation in return. So that's not a football move,
huh?
For this organization or anyone that's in rebuilding.
So you really, I'm really hearing a lot of skepticism from you, a lot of cynicism about this move to release running back Leonard Fournette from the Jacksonville Jaguars, of course. Fournette received praise and national attention in the spring here in Jacksonville when he led the first NFL protest following the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. It was Fournette who spoke out first, led the march from the Jaguar Stadium over to the Police Memorial Building. He called for the removal of the Confederate statue in Heming Park. Mayor Lenny Curry credited Leonard Fournette of the Jaguars for personally reaching out to him, as you report in the Florida Times Union, and encouraging the mayor to do this. And so how do you think the fans are going to react to Fournette, who really took a strong stand for racial justice in America, being released this way?
Well, I don't think he's being released because it's activism. I just think that the fans are upset because it's a poor football decision and it doesn't seem like it's well thought out of. There's many players on that team, particularly Chris Conley and some others, that really have strong feelings about what's going on in this country right now. And releasing Leonard Fournette is not going to change that philosophy in that locker room. you know, I think what the fans really concerned about is this football team, our football team in Jacksonville, are they really committed and serious about winning? I mean, that's the biggest question. And I do sincerely believe that the Jaguars organization have taken steps. And I think, you know, it's one thing to take steps, and it's another thing to just say you're doing something to get public favor. You know, I don't think this is a point of that. I think they're serious about finding a way to address this concerns about social injustice and police brutality and those kind of things. And I say this sincerely. I don't think that this subject and in the demeanor of the players, that this is going to be something that's just, you know, I mean, they almost boycotted a practice on this past Thursday.
And, why didn't they go through with it?
Well, they actually voted 37-36. They had a vote among the players, and Coach Marone gave them the option to the vote to decide on what they really wanted to do. They had a 2-hour discussion, and, you know, it was, from what I've gathered from the players, it was some hard conversation in that meeting. You know, there's some players on that team, and this is like America. There's some players on that team that feel that the issue of police violence and racial strife and that some players on that team doesn't feel like it's an issue of the magnitude that's being expressed across this country. And then you have some players on that team, as you say, in the, just like in the NBA and the other professional leagues, that they feel that their platform is the way that they can send that message out to this country that these things need to be addressed. And let me just say this. I mean, I'm a black man, and I'm born and raised in Jacksonville. And I don't think a lot of people understand what this issue is. You know, this issue, you know, the people that's marching and athletes is out and protesting and saying things to address this issue. I think what a lot of people in this country don't realize, they're not voicing just for this to abruptly change right now. They are addressing the issue because if you look back on my life and their life, their fathers told them to, you know, hopefully things will get better. And they're telling their children, hopefully these things get better. And things are not better. And they're doing this for the future. They don't want to have their children, you know, getting a routine stop by the police and wind up getting shot. And or anything. And you know, I understand police have a difficult job. I think the thing that's the voice being heard right now is police reform. I mean, I think they got to have a rule put in, or what athletes feel they need to have a rules put in, where every police department in this country will have the same type of, you know, stipulations of if you stop this person, these are the protocols that you must follow.
Mm-hmm.
And right now in this country, you don't have that.
Right.
I mean, I could go to New Orleans, Louisiana, and there, you know, they might have a camera, you know.
A body camera, yeah.
Another police department
may not
have that.
And if I could, let me just let everyone know, we're speaking with reporter John Reed of the Florida Times Union. He reported recently that the Jaguars voted to continue dialogue on how they can help bring forth change to America in accordance with all of the other professional athletes around the country raising their voice in this national movement. The Jaguars almost boycotted a practice last week, John reports, but decided to go ahead, unlike many other teams. Let's go to your calls right now as we talk about these issues here on the show. It's 549-2937, Javon. Hi, Javon. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Two quick points. Number one, if the NFL teams and teams across the country are going to continue to be subsidized to the tune of billions of dollars. And I remember when I lived in Jacksonville and they were cutting funding for libraries and they weren't cutting the grass in public spaces, they still found millions of dollars to do improvements at the stadiums. If we are going to have, if we're going to use our tax dollars in that way, then sports teams do have a responsibility and players have a responsibility to speak out on social issues, just like they do with cancer or domestic violence or any of the other social issues they address. Secondly, America should not be entertained by or profit from black talent so long as there are black people being oppressed on a daily basis and murdered in the streets. Plain and simple.
Javon, thanks. Yeah, certainly the players, particularly in the NBA, said, we will withhold our talents until these issues get a more serious look. John, here is an email from Mark at Mayport Naval Station. He says, most sports fans remember when Laura Ingraham told LeBron James to shut up and dribble when he talked politics in an interview. It was shameful, he says. He believes athletes are entitled to use their position as public figures to voice their opinions. And lo and behold, Colin Kaepernick was right. You know, it was 4 years ago that Colin Kaepernick first took a knee to send a form of silent protest about the police shootings of unarmed black people, the extrajudicial killings of black Americans by police. That was 4 years ago, John. It was wildly controversial. Kaepernick was pushed out of the NFL. Now, 4 years later, entire leagues are walking off the court. They are boycotting. They are all taking a knee. They are raising their voice in unison in this struggle, in this movement. So, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, let's go back to 2016 and also in 2017 when the Jaguars, you know, they had their protest during an anthem in London. You know, I would say this even from talking to the Jaguar players back then, that if, even though there was protest, it wasn't unified. You know, there were players who were concerned about the backlash. And another problem was that, you know, people misconstrued what they were protesting. A lot of people in the country felt that they were, you know, against the flag. And they didn't send their message out in a unified way of really specifically pointing out what the issue was in kneeling or doing those things. And now there's no question right now that the difference is now. Another thing is the difference between now and then is the league, to me, is a more supportive of what the players are experiencing right now, want to get out and try to change. There wasn't that way. It was more of a, you know, we're more concerned about not losing our finances or just having harmony. I know that the president kind of brought to light that what they were doing wasn't right. And at that time, I really felt that the league was more concerned about their image from a national standpoint, whether it was sponsorships or the money that was coming in. They just, to me, that was more important than what they actually was protesting about for. Now, I just think the consciousness of this country right now is focused on this, and I don't know if it has more to do with coronavirus.
I think that's it. I think because we're all sort of in a transitional weird time. It's finally right. Given the nation the opportunity to focus on this, especially white Americans. On our Facebook page, Nancy writes, I'm glad the athletes are finding and using their voice and power. William writes, if people of color had as much opportunity in the corporate world as they do in pro sports, there would be major brands stepping up to join the heroes fighting for equity in this country. We are proud of our Jags, he says. Let me get one more call in. It's Susan in Mandarin. Susan, go ahead.
I was listening to the Social Justice Committee of the City Council the other day, and I was shocked when they said that they're not making any recommendations about police cameras. They're waiting for Sheriff Williams and Melissa Nelson to say something. And I thought the committee was formed exactly to make suggestions about police cameras and police brutality. I remember seeing a video of Cornell Grooms with a police officer with his knee on Cornell Grooms' neck, which is the same way that George Floyd was killed. Luckily, Mr. Grooms was not killed, but still, we're doing the same sort of things in Jacksonville, and I thought that committee was going to come up with specific suggestions. So what exactly is that committee doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, Susan, that committee is meeting on these issues, John Reed. And how do you see the city getting involved in this issue in a more meaningful way?
Well, from a political standpoint, you got to have, and this is what the athletes are really, I feel flustered in a way. In order for change to happen in this Jacksonville to anywhere in this country, change is only going to happen through legislation. You know, you got to have the politicians, and obviously there's some politicians that's not listening to this message. And that's part of the reason why some of these athletes are flustered, you know, that they feel that they have this platform and people still are not listening because change is not happening. But this situation, change is going to take time to happen. You know, there's not going to be something where it's just going to change overnight. And patience is a virtue. I really feel that politicians, mayor, everybody has to understand what's going on and have some hard conversations, you know, on social justice, racial issues, and everyone going to have an open mind. I think this way of life now of just keeping things as they always been, I don't think that works in this place anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I think you got a young people now are active, a lot more active than I was when I was younger.
Now, speaking of which, Tanisha Tate was just hired by the Jaguars, their new VP of Social Responsibility and Impact, a graduate of Raines High School in Jacksonville. She will be furthering what they say is their emphasis on social responsibility and racial equality. What are your thoughts about that hire?
I think it's a move in the right direction, but that's a big job for one person. You know, I don't know what all the basis is. I think the Jaguars have to be community involved. I mean, they're going to have to, in just my opinion, I think the Jaguars, you got to take more of a initiative and a presence on different sides of this city. You know, they got to be a little bit more visible on the north side or the west side. You know, and maybe Jacksonville, and maybe they need to have more town hall meetings or something that they can organize so people can express their feelings. You know, this, like I said, this, I mean, we got to have hard conversations. You know, I think it's been too long where just people feel that it's uncomfortable talking about race and police issues. And in this day and age, that's part of the problem. You know, I mean, I just think if the Jaguars can be initiators of getting this community to join together and have those conversations, then that's a great thing. But it's going to take time, and it's also going to take people to try to change their thoughts on these issues, you know, and that they can be convinced of a change and not just so much saying that there's not a problem, then that's a move in the right direction. But it's a big job. It's going to take time, and it's got to be a lot of patience in it, and a lot of things have to happen to change.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us on this busy morning, because I know you had to listen to a Jaguars news conference at the top of the hour. I encourage everyone to read John in the Florida Times Union covering these issues around the Jacksonville Jaguars. John Reed of the TU, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me. Thank you.
And much more still ahead later, how to spark up your EQ, your emotional intelligence, in this tough time we're all in. But up next.
Oh, it's awful, not only just for me, but for a lot of blind people.
The special challenges of the blind in a time of pandemic. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Well, the coronavirus pandemic has been tough on all of us, but what if you have some kind of disability? It's even harder. What if you're blind? This may not be obvious to all of us, but there are special challenges. Blind Florida resident Mike Lance of Aventura reached out to us so that we could learn more about how tough it is right now for the blind community in this pandemic. Mike, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to be here.
You know, the pandemic is hard on all of us, but for low or no vision Florida residents, there are a lot of special challenges, and you are one of those people. What is this situation like for you right now?
Oh, it's awful. Number one, it's not only just for me, but for a lot of blind people, because of the fact that, let's take it for 5 to 8 feet distances. How do you know when you're in a store or when you're somewhere about 5 to 8 feet? The next thing is you can't shake hands, or you can't kiss your girlfriend, or you can't do what they call a sighted guide, where you are holding someone's arm and they're in front of you so they won't bump you into anything. People are afraid to even touch you. Okay, the next thing is the mask. Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm not only just totally blind, but hard of hearing. And when I put the mask on, forget it. You wouldn't want to see me out on the street because of the fact that I have a lot of trouble getting around with the mask. My whole sense of direction changes. I forget where I put things. And it's just awful.
Wow. Do you have a seeing eye dog?
I used to have a guide dog. Her name was Lexi. I got her from Southeastern Guide Dog School. I had her for 10 years.
And so now you're trying to get around without a dog. And it's hard enough to begin with. This pandemic has just exacerbated everything.
Right.
How do blind and low vision people like yourself, what are some ways you're trying to cope?
Well, what it is number one, I still get out. I try to. We have unfortunately, where I live here at the Imperial Club, we have a lockdown where people really can't get out, but they know me and they know what's happening. I do get to go out, like I had to go to Walgreens or Publix or something like that. And when I do go to places, I tell them I need help. Unfortunately, I had a situation last week where a friend of mine who works over at Walgreens was very nasty. He wanted me to bring somebody with me. He really couldn't help me because of the 5 to 8 feet. Another thing with 5 to 8 feet is simply that if you're hard of hearing, and you're totally deaf, and you need to do sign language people don't want to touch a blind person with the fact that they're hard of hearing or they're totally deaf. And another thing, lip reading is awful.
Right, you can't lip read with a mask. Yeah.
Right.
So, okay, so you've done such a good job of explaining the special challenges your community faces right now. What's the message you have for people who might encounter you or someone like you? What could we all do to help you?
What I think you could all do is come over and say, hi, my name is so-and-so. Can I help you? Can I be a friend? And you know what? Most of the blind people are scared because people aren't really out there to help you. People aren't out there to say, can I take you shopping? Or is there something I could get for you in a store? I think people could be more friendly.
People need to keep an eye out, people that are sighted, and do lend a helping hand.
Exactly.
And I want to thank you for bringing this to our attention. And I really appreciate you sharing your experience.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much, Mike.
It's been great.
That was Mike Lance of Aventura, Florida. Now, we want you to be aware that WJCT continues to offer our special newspaper and magazine reading service for the blind. Yes, it's the WJCT Radio Reading Service. You can listen to it on your computer or on a special radio we send you for free. We have scaled back our reading of the Florida Times Union due to the coronavirus, but you can listen to 1 hour of it at 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. That's because our volunteers are now using their audio equipment to read to the blind from home. Just go to wjct.org/radio reading to listen, and you can find out more about the service. Well, we're all doing what we can to maintain our health in these times. That includes our mental and emotional well-being. Today, it's a special opportunity. You can attend a virtual conference on your emotional intelligence and your health. Kelly Malnell is a Goldman EI certified coach with Image Partners, Inc. And EI, of course, stands for Emotional Intelligence. Kelly's on the line. Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Hey, morning, Melissa. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being with us. So you've launched a new initiative during this pandemic. This is Emotional Intelligence. You're bringing people from around the world together for this conference. What's going to be happening?
Oh, my gosh. Well, actually, in literally 15 minutes, we're launching our first summit. And going on first is my dear friend, Radha Yovanovitch. And she is MBA co-founder, coach, meta-coach, facilitator, and public speaker. And all these folks that are coming on this morning with me, Melissa, are global. Carol is reporting in from Paris, and Galen from the Midwest. Rupali is in Dubai. And we have people from all over the country coming in. We have our friend Bella Shaw, who is working with the Dalai Lama Fellows for many, many years. And Gail Van Gils, who is an expert in mindfulness and so forth. I just encourage anybody that wants to still sign up, they absolutely can. They can get their tickets right now.
Wow. Okay. It's eiglobal.net. That's EI for emotional intelligence, eiglobal.net. This kicks off at 10 a.m. So these are world-recognized industry experts who are trained in applied emotional intelligence in executive coaching and organizations, because when we use our EQ, our emotional quotient, our EI, not only do we improve our health, but we positively impact everything around us, our family, our friends, our school, our work. This is something we all need more of, higher emotional intelligence. Can you explain how you define emotional intelligence, Kelly?
So that's the best question, Melissa, really ever. So essentially, there are four general domains in emotional intelligence, and that includes self-awareness, self-regulation. And then we have the ability to connect with others, and that's like social awareness, and then relationship management. And we call those the four general domains. And the folks that are speaking today between 10 and 4 are going to talk on a range of topics that relate all of those competencies within there, those clusters of competencies, how we can use our emotional intelligence to improve our health. And again, you mentioned they're all experts. Yes, highly certified, a lot of different degrees. And essentially, these are industry experts that have been doing this for many years. So they're very well equipped to give us some practical tips and ideas of how we can manage our emotional and physical health, the health of our families, and of course our communities. As you know, Melissa, from listening to your show, you can hear all of the suffering that's going on globally. And essentially, our goal is to help people reduce that suffering and to provide them some tips and ideas. Also on the website, people will can find, if they'd like to, eiglobal.net. They can look at the speaker lineup for the entire day, and they can also click and find those speakers and talk to them themselves. They can find their books and their works because they're all very well published, and they have a lot of good work out there in the community. So on the website, if they go there, they can locate that particular speaker if they're interested, and then they can communicate with them themselves, which I'd highly encourage.
Absolutely. I mean, this is perfect timing. We need this information now more than ever, and the entire world is hurting. You must deal with this every day in your practice. What's one easy piece of advice you can give people listening right now that might not be able to participate in the conference?
Well, so a couple things. One is to find your breath. Whenever you're finding yourself getting too excited or too worried or too nervous, find your breath. And then, of course, reach out to somebody who is skillful and make sure that you're in good hands when you do that. For instance, it's a mental health provider or family member that you find that's strong. But essentially, do not stay alone. Reach out with somebody that you know you can count on. And that's what we're talking about, that we're wired to connect and that we need to find ways to connect with one another. And then, of course, I always look at Fred Rogers' mother. Fred Rogers said this, but also it was his mother that said to it first to him was, look for the helpers, because when there's helpers, there's hope. And essentially, this group of people today that are on this call are essentially all helpers.
Absolutely right. That is timeless advice from Fred Rogers. So check out Emotional Intelligence and Health, sponsored by Image Partners, Inc. Register now. It kicks off at 10 a.m. The website is eiglobal.net, eiglobal.net. And leading it all is Jacksonville's own Kelly Manel, a certified coach with Image Partners, certified in emotional intelligence, applied emotional intelligence. Kelly, so good to hear your voice. Thank you so much for letting us know about this, and I'm sure it will be quite illuminating.
Well, I appreciate it. And Melissa, thank you for all the work that you do, because what you help the community do is process a lot of this information. So we're very grateful to you as well.
Thank you. Again, eiglobal.net. It starts in about 10 minutes. A quick break, and when we come back, we'll check in on the Jacksonville Public Library and their new way to get kids and families outdoors and reading at the same time.
This message is brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, Florida Public Media, and this radio station.
This is Max Mayfield, former director of the National Hurricane Center. This hurricane season, you need to update your family preparedness plan so it includes COVID-19 preparations. So when a storm threatens, be ready to prepare your home and have your family hurricane kit ready. It includes supplies for your pets and enough COVID-19 sanitizers, disinfectant wipes, and masks. Know your zone, know your home. For more information, go to floridastorm.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Cherry Jones. She's nominated for an Emmy for her performance in the HBO series Succession. She's already won two Emmys for her performance in 24 as President Allison Taylor and in A Handmaid's Tale as Offred's mother. On Transparent, she played an iconic lesbian poet and professor. Join us.
Today at noon here on WJCT News 89.9.
The Alachua branch of the Seminole tribe were skilled cattlemen. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Seminole ethnographer Jason Herbert. We'll discuss the lumber industry in Florida and the history of redlining in Jacksonville's African-American community. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
As the country celebrates the centennial of the 19th Amendment, what remains ahead for the next generation of American women? The anniversary is a milestone. Its ratification marks a victory for equal rights, but an incomplete one. And black women who remain disenfranchised then still face obstacles 100 years later. I'm Jen White. A special report next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the Jacksonville Public Library just launched Story Walk. Now, this is cool. It's a creative way for kids and families to enjoy the outdoors and get reading at the same time. Here's what they did. They mounted pages of a children's book on signs and placed them along a path in Clutho Park in Springfield. And then they also created engaging activities in the park related to the book. Chris Bovin is Assistant Director of Community Relations and Marketing with the library, and he's on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Melissa.
So this is cool. This new story walk is in Clutho Park in Springfield at the intersection of West 2nd Street and Boulevard. That's right near the baseball field.
Right.
How did you guys come up with this idea?
Yeah, so this is actually something that started in Vermont. So there was somebody in Vermont a few years back who wanted to put together an exhibit like this, which is, you know, kind of a blown-out book throughout a walking path, because it combines, it combines some activity, it combines some literacy and some family bonding. So we thought it was a perfect opportunity for our community to have this same type of experience. And it's, you know, it's great because it's set up even for the situation that we're in today with COVID. All the posters spaced more than 6 feet apart, and you can go out, enjoy it with your family, not have to, you know, be, you know, concerned about being around, being in close quarters with a lot of other people. And it's a really great, fun activity to go and do.
So when you go and you participate in the story walk and you walk through it in the park, you're also directed then to sign up for a library card and get a free book, too.
Right. So, yeah. So we have a bunch of books that we want to give away. So for the first people that go through the exhibit, so get there soon. While supplies last, you can get a copy of the book. And the book is Over in a River and I can't remember the whole title, but it's by Marianne Burkett.
Through the Woods?
It's a wonderful book. Yeah, Over in a River, Flowing Out to the Sea is what it is. So by Marianne Burkus. It's a cool book. And you'll get a copy of it if you're one of the first people to go through the exhibit. So there's a little QR code, there's a link, and what you're going to do is go down to the main library after you go through the exhibit and show them that you went through, take a little survey, and you'll get a copy of the book to take home with you.
What if you have multiple kids in your family? Is it one book per household?
So it's a good question. We'd love to be able to give it to every kid in the household, but right now, just to make sure that everybody can enjoy it, we are going to just do one per household. But we're also going to try to have some other activity sheets and other things that everybody in the family can enjoy.
Now, this is a permanent installation. So once a quarter, you'll put a new book into Story Walk. Is that right?
That's correct. So, yep, so this exhibit is in there for the duration. And every quarter we're going to put a new book in, and the books are all, we're working to make sure that we get those all from Florida authors. And they're also going to be seasonal to kind of what's going on. So, you know, it'll be something for the spring and something for the summer. And so you'll be able to enjoy a book that's relative to kind of what you're thinking about right then.
So families, get your kids over to Clutho Park in Springfield, because Story Walk is set up there, a creative way to enjoy the outdoors and get your children excited about the magic of books and reading. Walk the path, read the books, do the social media hashtag. It'll show you how, and then go pick up your free library card and free book at the main library in their children's department while supplies last. As Chris said, the book is Over in a River Flowing Out to the Sea by Marianne Berkes, the first Story Walk book up in Clutho Park. What a great idea, Chris. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thanks, Melissa. I really appreciate it.
Again, that's Story Walk up now in Clutho Park in Springfield. Check it out. And that's our show. Thanks for listening, and to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Her kids went back to school today. So, Heather, our thoughts and prayers are with you. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo, and Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We appreciate your feedback, and we do read all of your emails. You can catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock on this radio station, and our podcast will be up today wherever you get yours. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow and connect with you then. In the meantime, have a great Monday, and keep wearing those masks.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.